And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Megan DeBayer, who is the author of a new book called How to Raise a Man. We're speaking to her today when she's in Portugal. Just to give you a bit of Megan's background, she has been developing parenting courses that are offered at schools around Australia, South Africa and the USA. These include the popular Strong Mothers, Strong Sons course. She is a prolific inspirational speaker at conferences and appears on television and radio. And Megan is the mother of two young men. Megan, welcome to Dads on the Air.
I'm very happy to be here. A little bit nervous because of the title of my book, but I'm absolutely ready to jump right in with a dad.
Oh yes, I'll probably be pretty brutal, but the title is How to Raise a Man. So I've got a very big question. When does a boy become a man?
A beautiful question. So I think that's about maturity. And physiologically, we tend, as the Western world, to kind of say, well, around about 20, 21, you know, you're an adult. I don't think that's true at all. I think we only become men and women with emotional maturity. And honestly, that is happening later and later. I don't know why, but this idea of being a fully whole, rounded person, engaged with your emotions, understanding your purpose in life, understanding a sense of your destiny, and what your place is. I think that's only happening to men and to women at around, you know, 30, if not later. So it is a very yes. So I use that How to Raise a Man quite glibly before I knew the hornet's nest of questions that were going to come at me, because it was my idea of saying, once a boy hits his teenage years, we are raising him towards his manhood. We no longer model coddling a little boy and looking after a little boy. We've got to help him to become more accountable and responsible. But to this idea of when maturity happens for a human being, I think it's quite late in that.
From my own experience, I think a real turning point was having a child. But I think the aim of your book is to get boys more like men a bit before that.
Yes, the aim of my book is to help mothers reframe their parenting and to be able to move from those junior school years, the prep school years, into the senior school years with a different attitude towards their parenting. And this having this long-term vision of, in actual fact, I'm no longer just running around my little boy making sure, you know, he has everything he needs. I'm actually engaged with a very deep, complex human process, which is about helping him towards his manhood. So that was my idea of the title, but I didn't realize it would also open up hornet's nest of questions, you know, around does a woman understand manhood, you know? Mm. I've had those kind of questions, you know, thrown at me. And I realized that it's quite a very deep topic that the title suggests. And I do dip into ideas of deeper questioning in my book. A lot of my book is practical, but a lot of it is also helping a mom philosophically look at her role.
You mentioned in your book that you spent over 10 years interviewing senior boys in their final years of school. And it was a very interesting question that I asked myself, was what advice would you give your mother? I'm just wondering, what were some of the answers that came up when you posed that question?
You know, I have asked that at so many schools and spoken to so many boys, and I was always fascinated nominated. So I'm very excited that these days that I did that survey, and I started that 10 years ago, and the answers have changed over time. But the one that has always like struck me in my heart, and it's been said by boys over and over and over, that boys look at me and they just say that our moms must realize that we love them. Our moms must realize them that we love them. And they look at me and they say that. So even though they've become monosyllabic, quite withdrawn, shunning mom in a lot of ways, there's this real call for boys to, for moms to remain heart connected with them, and that they are heart connected. If they're just going through a phase of trying to discover themselves within their group. The other thing boys have said over and over is trust me. Mm. Trust me, even though I'm experimenting and I'm, trust me, I'm listening to the values, you know, that you have laid down in the home. The third thing is listen to me. And the next one that's big on the list is stop arguing at home. You know, stop arguing at home. Stop arguing with everyone. You know, let's all stop arguing at home. Mm. So that has come out a lot. Boys do ask for their space and their freedom, that they understand that they're trying to discover themselves and they don't have all the answers. So boys are saying that a lot. I did write sort of quite a comprehensive list in my book.
Yeah, it's funny when, you know, you look back now and, you know, even if your mother's not around, I mean, I'd love to go and ask her now, but I can't do that. But with the current world situation with COVID, it's forcing people to spend more time together with their teenage sons. And I guess you'd see that as presenting challenges and opportunities.
Yes. There were incredible opportunities in the beginning. It's kind of been quite a roller coaster. You guys, I don't think, have had the lockdowns and the restrictions as badly, continuously, as a lot of European countries and certainly South Africa. So we really have been on this roller coaster of, in the beginning, the opportunities of what could families do together, and let's do quizzes together online, let's dance together online, let's do gym together online, you know, and there was a lot of kind of excitement. And on the Facebook pages that I'm involved in, and the online courses I was running, I was getting feedback from moms that actually it was going quite well, and that the teenagers were more used to being online than they were, and the teenagers were coping more. But it went on in 2020, and now popping over into 2021, where teenagers have become really frustrated. They have an evolutionary impulse to leave the home, and now suddenly parents back, you know, knowing everything that their teenager is doing. The teenager can't find any privacy at all. So there have been loads of explosiveness. But I think it's an opportunity to practice radical kindness, to go back to our gratitude exercises, to look for those small mercies, to have those deep conversations. Jump right in. Ask the questions. But have a forgiving heart and an accepting heart. So it really is asking parents to dig incredibly deep and be the adults in the room, and understand that for teenagers it's ridiculously difficult.
I'm interested at one point where you say that parents need to develop their curiosity instead of being judgmental all the time. And I think, yeah, Einstein said that's what distinguished him, was his lifelong curiosity. So perhaps it's almost parents have to go back to their childhood a little bit to get that perhaps that sense of curiosity about what their kids are doing.
Yes, curiosity is me. I've got a statement that I often say to mums, and I say, turn perfection into being present. Turn control into connecting. You know, turn your lectures into questions. Turn your lectures into questions. And that's where the curiosity comes. Because it's so easy to give instructions, to tell them how to do it, when to do it, what to do. And as opposed to, but can't we begin to change that into being curious and ask direct questions? You know, how are you going to do this? What do you think is a good idea? What would you prefer? What do you think about this complex problem, and how would you solve it? I'm as a parent, I've got an idea, but I'd much prefer to hear your idea. So it's that curiosity, and it does soften the heart as well, and it opens the mind. And aren't we better parents when we do have mind and open heart and a real willingness to engage with life from our teenagers' point of view? But just coming back to this idea of being stuck in the home, let's not forget that we do have help. We have help because we have those great outdoors. We have nature, and we're allowed to be in nature. And that is such a help to soften us, to get us into our exercise, to take us back to wellness. We need that right now more than ever, and so do teenagers. We need to get them off those screens. That's a fight. That's a real fight. But we do need to get them off those screens and back into the natural world so they can feel their bodies again. Yes. And become embodied human beings, which it's essential. That's all I can say. It's absolutely essential. I mean, for myself, if I didn't have all my wellness practices, I wouldn't have come through this as well as I have.
So there's a lot to be said for walking barefoot in the park and those sorts of exercises.
Yes, yes, and yes. And isn't that great for boys? Don't we often see our teenagers when they're barefoot outside, either on the beach or in the park or walking up a mountain? Don't we see the child in them come out again, and that creativity and that fun and the laughter and the play? So I think boys really benefit from reminding them that in actual fact we are deeply connected to the earth, to animals, to the elements, and that this indoor, inside living on screens is actually, it is unnatural.
And we're speaking today with Megan De Beyer, who is the author of a wonderful new book called How to Raise a Man. We might take a short break here, and Megan has graciously picked a song for us today. Could you tell us which one you picked, Megan?
I picked the Nina Simone, I'm Feeling Good. As a child, I grew up with jazz in my home. We had jazz musicians in our family. And when I was thinking of the song, I just kept going back to jazz. And of course, being raised in South Africa, I was surrounded by beautiful, strong women of color. And that's what kind of spoke to my heart. And I think we need a song like that these days. We need all these uplifting, beautiful songs.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world, in a bold world for me. When you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me.
And that was Feeling Good by the incomparable Nina Simone, as chosen for us today, especially by our guest Megan DeBayer, who has a new book out called How to Raise a Man. So, Megan, we were just talking about the importance of nature. Another thing I think you draw attention to is the importance of language. And, you know, you even say, don't say I've got a teenager, you say he's teenaging. And I guess the way we talk to others about our young sons can be important, particularly if they overhear us.
Yes, I do actually have some fun in my book as well, because once, about languaging, because once I was on holiday with a family, and they were American, Californian, and, you know, Californians seem to come up with words that we hear for the first time, and I heard this dad say to his daughter, you know, you really are turning on the volume today. You seem to be experimenting with your volume. And it was, what he was referring to was a little girl who was yelling, you know, absolutely yelling outside. And when I heard him say, you're experimenting with your volume, I chuckled and I laughed and I thought, you know, we really got to find humorous ways to say things. And so I had some fun with that in my book. But what I do have, what I do say to moms is that definitely in the preteens and in the early teen years, there is a hypermasculinity that shows up with teenage boys. We may not have raised our boys to be full of bravado and monosyllabic and, you know, sort of quite surly. We may not have raised them like that, but they do go through a phase of that, because that's because the hormonal changes, the brain changes, is trying to come to terms with, well, I'm actually no longer a boy. Who am I? What am I? So there's like an identity search. So they tend to be quite dismissive of the feminine and really be searching out the masculine. And that's what I find on average. Of course, there are exceptions. And during that phase, there's this hyper-masculinity. So a lot of bravado, a lot of posturing, a lot of image-seeking. And during that phase, moms need to use their language to give very clear instructions. And moms are notorious for being quite, my word, I'm going to be shot down in flames here, but moms are notorious for being quite long-winded and giving reasons why they're saying something. And, you know, don't forget your tog bag because I'm not driving back to school, or then you won't be able to play sports, and, you know, then you'll feel the one that you're the one missing out. So they can be quite long-winded. And so I encourage my moms to, if they're going to give an instruction, make it short, sharp, because we certainly hear dads doing that, and let's learn from the masculine and begin to adopt the languaging that boys need to hear that you are in a position of authority. So take your tog bag today, full stop.
Simple.
You know, and not all the explanation around, keep it simple, keep it short. Boys, because of this brain reorganization that's happening in the teen years, and I'm sure you've heard a lot about that, you know, with the myelination and the pruning that goes on. It takes them back into this organized space. So we also need to make sure that we are giving him one instruction at a time.
So I guess that comes under parenting style. You mentioned four types of parenting: the authoritative, the neglect, and the permissive. Oftentimes parents tend to follow their own parents, don't they? And in which style they follow. Is it possible to break out of what their parents have instilled in them, do you think?
Yes. I think the biggest predictor of how we parent is how we were parented. And in conscious parenting, which is the approach I use, it's quite an intentional parenting style. So it takes, we need to take time contemplating, focus on self-awareness, know where our own trigger points are and where it's coming from. And because most of us, in my generation, and I'm not sure your generation, but certainly for myself who have now got older boys and beyond their teenage years, I had parents who were very authoritarian. It was children should be heard and not seen. Just do as I say, don't do as I do. It's no longer like that. We have a much more kind of cooperative parenting style. Homes tend to be, there I use the word, more democratic, where parents discuss what's the best way forward here for the boy, and the boy is also allowed to have a say. So it has changed, but we do tend to fall back on authoritarian styles, which is, I'm the parent, you live under my roof, just, especially during the teenagers, you know, just do as I say. And that can cause quite a reaction. So I keep going back to the authoritative is an important place for moms to be, which is not to be the cool mom, the mom who's trying to please, the mom who feels guilty, the mom who's kind of maybe a bit resentful, or the pleasing mom. Stop that and go into the firm but fair approach, which is the authoritative approach.
Now, I think you raised your boys as a single mum for at least some of the time. How does that affect which style a parent adopts? If, you know, there's been perhaps an unhappy divorce, there's the question of discipline, and I'm pleased to see you do not encourage corporal punishment or even shaming or blaming.
Yes.
What did you find were the best ways to discipline your children?
The best way for me was to change my own attitude. I know that sounds weird, but the moment I could find a place of calm within myself and be more mindful that what was going on was natural, and that teenagers would experiment and discover and become calmer and less panicked and less anxious. Once I did that, I was able then to choose my times for conversations with my boys, and I would always turn it back to them. I'd say, all right, I see this went down at school today, or you failed your test, or you fought with this boy, or this teacher's unhappy with you. Please explain to me what went on. I want to hear it from your point of view. So I practiced fairness. I turned it around where I waited to hear from them first instead of just jumping to assumptions. The moment that I started doing that, my boys began to absolutely trust me. And once they trusted me, that was half the job done, because they knew I was on their side. They knew I was going to take a calm approach to this. And then once I put in the gating or I set some boundaries around what they could or couldn't do, or if I took the phone away. So I had to find that strength within myself. And that takes a lot of courage when you're a single mom, to do that. I did also believe in the time that boys needed good male role models. So I really, genuinely, with all my heart, befriended their father, made peace. We used to have long conversations, you know, on the telephone, just saying to each other, look, we've got to come on board. We need each other in this process. And so there was a lot of kind of forgiveness and bridge building around having to co-parent in this. And I'm so pleased I did that. It did take quite a big heart and a lot of self-work to get there. So I don't think moms can do this alone. We need good male role models. If it's not the dad, we need to find them and bring them in, because disciplining and setting boundaries for boys is hard. They push back a lot. And so I found I needed support in that. As a psychologist, it was great because I could go back to therapy. I could make sure, you know, dad and I were on the same page. I could depend on the school a lot. I reached out for the school, spoke to the counseling center, trying to work out exactly how to set these boundaries and stick to them.
I think we can see why Megan's courses are so popular, but unfortunately we've run out of time. I'm sure we could talk for hours about all these wonderful
yes,
topics, but
yes,
since we've run out of time, it just reminds me to give a special thank you to Megan DeBayer, who is the author of How to Raise a Man. Megan, thank you very much for making time, early time, to speak with us today about your new book.
Yes, I love chatting to you. Your questions were amazing. Thank you very much. I so enjoyed engaging with you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I think that what you do and your podcast is essential. So thank you so much for the work that you do.
Thank you, Megan. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show.